episode where we had to cut a story because the details turned out to be wrong, because like between when we had recorded and when we were about to publish, new information came out saying that like somebody had lied or something. So we would like just cut a whole story and replace it with a song. And like Luke, just executive decision, he's on his own. I'm in class or something at the time. He's like, I'm just going to replace it with
a song. When in doubt,
scissors. And we just overplayed them, and I was like, we can't do this anymore.
I think we played every song on their album, like, just, like, at least once, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So which Scissors Sisters song have you chosen?
I am going to go back to the very start, because it was towards the end that we started really overplaying them, and I'm just going to say Take Your Mama.
Take Your Mama by the Scissors Sisters. We will be back just after this.
Thank you. back. You're listening to Can Queer. I'm Bradley. I'm here with Luke and Sebastian. We are discussing their long and historied career in radio.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw something in that you may not have thought to ask. Luke introduces himself as Luke Smith, and I only introduce myself as Sebastian.
Yeah, I thought you just wanted to be anonymous. Yeah.
And not for legal reasons, because there's a billion Luke Smiths in the world, so if you wanted to be creepy about it, it would still take you hours and hours and hours to find him. There's a finite number of Sebastians in Canada, so I am just Sebastian, even though if our faces were out there, I would say my last name.
Do you have a name doppelganger?
Sebastian's with my surname. Mm-hmm. So I have a French-Canadian surname, and Sebastian is one of the top most common names for boys of my age group. So there's a lot of Sebastians with my surname in Quebec, but I'm the only one who does not live in Quebec. So that would make me very easy to find, in fact. So that's why my last name has never come up.
How has the media landscape changed for the better or worse since you started in media?
Oh, man.
Every Tom, Dick, and Harry is a podcast now, which is great. Yeah. I think in terms of, and honestly, we're on the way out. And I want to encourage anyone to create and share. I'm very passionate about storytelling. Yeah. I think that is key, and it's a big part of what we do. The queer media landscape, I think, has got worse.
Yes. That was my next question.
Oh, yes.
In terms of like the last 5 years or so.
Especially the past five years, yeah.
There are some queer media that has not gone anywhere. Out The Advocate, mm-hmm. pinknews.co.uk. Mm-hmm.
You did not mention my former employer.
So I have a lot of reverence for Pink Triangle Press, which initially I think ran The Body Politic, and then it became Extra. It was a print paper in three or four major cities across Canada.
I have a
Canada.
Lot of historical reverence for PTS.
But PTP, Pink Triangle Press. And,
PTS.
PTS is a form of,
In order to maintain their audience, a lot of the material they produce focuses on things that get a lot more eyeballs and not necessarily the kinds of stories we cover. We don't really talk about RuPaul's Drag Race.
No, exactly.
You know, and
half of it's like, oh my god, here's a picture of Daniel Craig without his shirt on. It's just, that's not news, buddy.
We used to produce news. Well, sorry, I say we. When I was employed there, we actually produced news.
Yeah. And it irritates me because Pink Triangle Press, they have multiple levels of editor. They have a staff. Mm-hmm. We don't have a staff.
Yeah.
Volunteer to do this. Mm-hmm. But it is disappointing that there is less hard news coverage than I think is deserved. And when we talk about Toronto Pride blatantly providing fraudulent documents for federal grants, when we talk about organizations declaring bankruptcy with nobody on record announcing who they are making those decisions, it's just frustrating that queer media focuses broadly more on Daniel Craig and the movie Queer and less on the actual accountability that our community genuinely needs.
It's also the nature of the story that needs to be reported has changed. Because, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it was more about human rights, civil rights, do LGBT folks have the same rights as the rest of Canadians? There was a while where we didn't. And then in the US, they didn't have the same rights as everyone else. You could still argue that there's some edge cases that still need to be cleaned up, that it's not perfect, but it's still a lot better. And it used to be that a lot of the media was like, just what are the feds doing? What are the provinces doing? Are the school systems actually accommodating for people better? Are the medical systems accommodating for people a little bit better? And over the past 5 years, things have kind of evened out and they're pretty good. So the nature of the queer reporting should have shifted to the idea of just normal community reporting. Good news, bad news. So here's a good thing that happened. Here's a bad thing that happened. Holding her unaccountable. So there is this weird emphasis on controlling the narrative where it's like people are terrified of being portrayed negatively in the news. And what happens is it's like this string of cover-ups, and like eventually you uncover everything and it's just, oh, the finances at Halifax Pride are not really up to par. And they've been covering it up for so long that as we were uncovering everything, it was like, this looks like this weird, deep conspiracy theory, but it was just bad finances.
A quick correction. Halifax, I don't think, had a finance issue. That was a different pride.
They also had a finance
issue. Halifax had, like, a roller coaster, like a revolving door of boards of directors. They couldn't keep two people in the room long enough to run a parade. Like, it was an issue.
That one was mostly infighting, but because they were covering up their finances for the longest time, it looked worse than it was because of the cover-up. And it's just, I don't know, I really do believe in that whole idea there's no bleach quite as sanitizing as sunshine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, just the idea of knowing is better than not knowing, even if it's not flattering. You're a small pride organization in, I don't know, a city whose name ends in Wawa, of which there's a half dozen.
Petawawa.
There's if you say anything negative about Toronto Pride, it's because you're a homophobe. And it's like, no, it's just I want us to do well. I want us to do better. Like, I don't want us to be cringe and so disorganized. And how many pride committees are there in Canada that would do well, except every time somebody with talent walks in the door, they get chased away by the dramatic infighting nonsense.
There's no accountability.
Yeah. And I would love, like, that's the number one thing that I would love to see happen in the LGBT media is people actually holding our own accountable and not be called an internalized homophobicist.
Yeah, instead all you get is a recap of Drag Race Down Under.
It's very frustrating.
And I think our institutions will operate in the dark. You know, Toronto Pride didn't go out of the way to tell people that they were fraudulent in grant applications.
Yeah.
It took a history professor from York University to break that news.
Who's reading unrelated documents and found a weird
loophole. And he's like, wait, hang on a minute.
Yeah. And he just followed the chain of like, well, that doesn't make sense. Then he looked up the original document. Well, that doesn't make sense. He looked up the reference and that doesn't make sense. And he looked up, it was a whole, he explained it to us. It took like 5 minutes for him to explain how he discovered it. And he's got dreamy eyes, but.
Yeah. Dr. Tom Hooper is.
Now everyone's going to look him up online.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a brilliant image search.
Dr. Tom Hooper.
Don't do that. It's weird.
Yeah.
What do you hope the legacy of your work, the work that you've done, will be?
That's a great question. I've been thinking about that a lot. One of the things that brings most pride to me, and you referenced this, I think, a little bit earlier.
Okay.
I had a conversation with the station manager of CIVL-FM in Abbotsford, BC. Mm. Bible Belt.
Really? I didn't know British Columbia. That part of BC.
Absolutely Bible Belt, British Columbia. Mm-hmm. Very conservative. And he's like, I'm putting a show on. Mainly because I want this community to hear the gays. It is necessary for our community to hear from all perspectives within the community. And because there's no one locally creating that content, you're a placeholder so that the audience hears that content. I'm like, that's brilliant. And then he was like, I'm sorry, guys, someone local wants to do this. We're going to pull your show. I'm like, even better news. I'd rather not be broadcast in a community because there's someone local than being broadcast because there's no one there. So I think our legacy, hopefully, is queer folks in communities big and small having an outlet and maybe being inspired to come and fill that gap in their own communities. Anyone and everyone listening, to see that the perspective that we bring is just a part of that fabric of the Canadian culture. Mm-hmm. That means a lot to me. And in the time of the show, since that I've become Canadian. But yeah, so that's what I hope our legacy is that folks will speak and tell their stories.
Yeah.
And that folks have heard more of the stories of the folks in that community.
I mean, my answer actually very strongly piggybacks off of yours, because you
don't have original thought.
No. So when we started off on Three Gays on the Radio, we were very much an Ottawa local thing. When we shifted to Velvet Studio, we were more of a topical podcast thing, and we were a little bit more broad. And then when we switched again to CanQueer, and we tried to focus on Canada, it was about a couple years after that where Luke was like, look, we gotta not shift direction, but we have to be aware of our direction. Because it turns out radio station managers, because he had asked around, had told him that, like, yeah, as far as we know, it's mostly just like commuters and little old ladies in the countryside who listen to you. And I was like, okay, we'll adjust course. And I, realizing that our audience, like we although we started off trying to be that voice in the community that people could listen to if they had nowhere else to go, if they were too closeted or too afraid or just coming out or whatever, and they didn't feel comfortable going to a center, going to a gay bar, going to a GSA, anything like that, that they could at least listen to us. And then after a while, like, Glee came out, and that was not necessary anymore.
It was never necessary. Glee wasn't necessary.
No. I watched... Actually, we talked about this earlier. I watched the pilot and was like, ooh, that's enough for me. Realizing that really what we were doing is we were the voice of connection between people who did not understand the LGBT world and the LGBT world. I kind of shifted direction. I have always been a little bit contrarian, but after Luke told me that, I turned into the, I'm going to be...
You're irritating.
I'm going to be...
It is irritating.
That's why the show's ending.
I would be like...
I'm just done with it.
What is the pushback that, like, somebody who wants to care, but they don't get it, what would they say? So I have very much turned into that like... But why are we doing that? Why is that important? Does that make sense? And then sometimes actually even that is actually how I think, where it's like, nah, they're just being histrionic. It's not that big a deal. Like, calm down. We're not going to die. Like, over the past couple of years, the number of times where something gets in the news and some queer journalist is like, they're going to put us in gas chambers. And it's like, calm down. So I have very much been on that side of like the sober second thought, trying to be a little bit more based. And pushing back a little bit on Luke, where like Luke is representing, I don't want to say the mainstream, but like the sort of dominant, like what would like a queer activist say? And I'm trying to be that guy in the corner who wants to participate, but ends up quitting because he's tired of everything. I kind of take on that role. And there have been times where like, we'll stop the show and afterwards, like we completely agree on everything. It's just like on the show, like he takes a little bit more one angle, I take a little bit more another angle, and kind of show that, first of all, like you can debate within the community and not be hostile and not turn it into name calling and not being into...
Yeah. In general, too, in the world.
Yeah, in general.
We should all be able to do that. Yeah.
Like something that I feel very strongly about is like if you 80% agree with someone, that's actually really amazing. And you should celebrate 80% agreeing. And most people, at least 70%, agree with each other on everything. Like, traffic is bad and we should fix that. Everyone agrees on that. You know, that's not controversial.
People with chauffeurs.
You could disagree on how to fix it. That's a completely different thing. That's where the last 20-30% comes in. But it's just like, it's okay to mostly agree. And if someone disagrees with you, you don't have to just immediately call them like a transphobic, post-colonial, blah, 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 blah. They just disagree with you. And that doesn't mean they want you to die. It just means they think there's a different way of achieving the same positive goal.
So you hope the legacy will be like a representation of positive discourse.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And a little bit of pushback and how to push back in a way that is constructive and not jerkish.
How do you feel about the show ending? Is it bittersweet?
We've been at this a while, and I was looking, you know, we're looking at, I mentioned that GLAAD survey with public opinion, you know, moving back against queer folks. Actually, later on, we're recording a big gay quiz of the year. And one of the things that I enjoy that we've done in all this time is celebrate the good news.
Yeah.
Huge movements of queer rights in Asia that almost nobody talks about. You know what I mean? But on the other side, I'm looking at, to use a term, you know, the emotional labor that goes into reading hundreds and hundreds, like, just to give you a sense of how many news stories we review each week to prepare for the show. Easily 500-600, maybe 800.
And I monitor French media as well.
Yeah.
Because there's news stories out of Quebec and France that, for some reason, France is actually really good at tracking Africa. Mm-hmm. So if you read French news, you learn a lot about Uganda.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say I read more than you. I just read different sources from you. This is actually one of the reasons why he finds stories. I'm like, I had never heard this. And I find stories. He's like, where did you find that? Some of it's because we use different... I mean, it's good that we don't overlap. We find more that way. But yeah, hundreds of things, and sometimes I read it in French, and it
doesn't. So to the point of that emotional labor, with Trump in power, with, I think there were like over 500 anti-queer bills introduced across the United States last year. That's not going to get better. Mm. You know what I mean? And it's, I am just not emotionally prepared for another Trump era of bad news. And I think we have to recognize in ourselves when we have capacity to do things and when we don't have capacity. And we've been doing this for a decade. We've covered so much brilliant, beautiful, amazing good news. And we've covered some terrible news. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have just run out of rope on doing that.
Yeah, for me, it's related but very different. So I started off in I spent a lot of years in linguistics in university. At one point in time, I had a discourse analysis professor who was from Poland. And one of the things she said is one of the tragedies of being of Eastern European origin is you get very good at guessing the truth from listening to people's lies. Hmm. And this is very much a Soviet thing. I've heard Romanians say the same thing. I've definitely heard Ukrainians say the same thing. Of just hearing things from your government or from the media and just being like, not only do I know that that's a lie, but I have a gut feeling about what the truth is based on that. So sort of going back to your question earlier about queer media dying, there have been so many times recently where I've seen things in the news. I'm like, that can't be right. And I looked it up and I was like, what are you talking about? So just the number of times where people have freaked out about something. And when I looked into it on my own, going to original documentation, because there are certain things like what people had to say about like Project 2025, for example. 95% of that document is about changing the bureaucratic structure of the government. It has very little in there to do with human rights or LGBT rights or women's rights. It's almost entirely about bureaucratic structures. And it was authored by like 1,000 people, so chances of some weirdo slipping something in there. Now, I'm not going to defend the project because when I actually read the details, I'm like, these are good questions with bad answers. Like, I'm glad that no one's taking that thing seriously. Don't get me wrong. But it was just when I actually read it myself, I was like, everybody is repeating everybody else's lies about this. Mm. And it's just, I've come to the point where as much as I hear something in the news from low budget media or from governments, local governments, from politicians, from celebrities, and I hear it and I have this gut instinct of that cannot be right. And I'm like, for my part, I'm exhausted at trying to guess at what the truth is. And you cannot be guessing and also be doing news. And I'm just at the point now where it's like, this is untenable at this point in time in history. So, and I've been kind of exhausted for a while now because that Pride meeting that made me drink.
I made you sit through an AGM,
I called you up.
You mentioned earlier about something about the audience and how we play almost two roles in our conversations.
Yeah.
I am maybe a little bit more plugged into the queer culture and queer cultural references than you are. And I often drop little crumbs of distinctly queer references that our queer audience would absolutely pick up immediately, but our majority straight audience just maybe don't. And I think that's also something that's added. Like, our ability to speak to our queer listeners and our straight listeners is a skill that's taken a decade to curate and build on.
I don't want to be so egotistical and say, like, the world's going to lose this when we leave. Like, we're so special. But we do bring 15 years. Like, the number of times where a news story comes out and I'm like, I am skeptical of this because this happened in 2016 and this happened in 2019. And when it happened in this city, it didn't turn out so bad. Or like they've already done this before and the feds said that it's not legal when it happened in 2012. And things have gotten better since then. I don't know why you're worried about this if it happened in 2012. So the history that we bring as well is definitely a huge part of it. Mm. And we're both pretty good at remembering things. And collectively.
Yeah, between us, we remember one thing.
Like, you know the orange cat collective? Like, they all share one brain cell, and when you get two orange cats together, they're brilliant, but on their own, they're kind of dippy. The number of times, like, we just did this, like, 5 minutes ago. We were like, I don't know, it was on the East Coast or something. It was like, no, it was New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, one will start the memory, the other will finish the memory. So, yeah, there is a lot of that sort of repository of news and context and...
I was going to say context and experience you brought.
Yeah.
So I'm very sad that your show's ending. I think that the queer community of Canada is actually losing something because independent voices are important now more than ever. So hopefully someone listening will be inspired to make their own show and fill the gap.
I hope so. I look forward to hearing about it.
Well, speaking of looking forward to hearing, we'll be playing out with an Owen Pallett song.
Okay.
I mean, Terrell Segways is my bread and butter. Now, you chose Owen Pallett from your Renfair days.
Yeah.
What particular song are our listeners hearing as we play out?
This is the dream of Wynn and Reg.
Excellent. And we'll be back next week. Thank you so much, Bradley.
Thank you for
interviewing us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. You've been listening to Can Queer. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian.
And I'm Bradley.
And thank you for listening.
Prince of Buzz, can't wait until you, can't wait till you unsubscribe. I'll be alone, be described. But what if they like it and lock us in a cannery with your accordion until we can our love, we can get up.
Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
amazing volunteers at CJSF, wish you a fun-filled Kwanzaa and a happy new year.